Friday, 5 p.m. and a beautiful Friday it is before a three-day weekend. There's so many different ways to make it better and better and better, but I don't think better than this is possible.
It's almost a perfect day.
The Friday before a three-day weekend at 5 p.m.?
Yes.
Yeah, perfect moment anyway.
And the weather.
Yes. Win, win, win.
The weather gods.
Plus, it's time for American Hit Radio where we can talk about music and have
some
fun for an hour.
Another win.
Rack it up. Just keep racking them up.
Up in there.
Welcome to the show, folks. I'm glad you're aboard for the next hour. I'm Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. As I said, we'll be discussing music for the next hour, as we always do. Might even play some of it as well, besides talking about it. We're known to do that from time to time. We've started a series on Friday, which we are calling the European Theater. Just did this recently. We did two shows already for our How Music Changed series, where we cover aspects of music that we consider to be among the most influential in the entire history of recorded music. Big statement. We have 250 of these topics that are lined up. And this is actually number 23 in our chronological insofar as it can be, because so many subtopics can span decades. This one actually does. We call this the European Theater, where we are looking at artists from the 20th century that have had a profound impact here in America. We spent the first show discussing the German artists, Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill. We spent last week focusing primarily on Edith Piaf, a little bit of Maurice Chevalier as well. And this will be our third and final entry in this series, where I think we pretty much reach perhaps what might be the artistically the most interesting, I think, to Americans. We're going to stay in France and cover two artists, Jacques Brel and none other than Serge Gainsbourg. So, both of these guys, Jacques Brel in particular, he was Belgian. Very popular, though, in France and his home country of Belgium. He had a very firm grasp on the musical legacy of the 20th century. He knew all, of course, exactly what had happened before him. He knew Maurice Chevalier. He had, you know, and Edith Piaf, of course. Edith Piaf had covered one of his songs, and we played her version of that song, Ne me quitte pas, last week. We'll hear that today in a slightly different version, in an American version of the same song. The thing is, like, what Brel did is he utilized, like, this history in a way that was quite unique. There was no American counterpart that was willing to go where he went as a songwriter. All of his songs were both sociological and existential. But he did this with ease. While Americans would basically avoid that sort of thing like a plague, it was pretty much his bread and butter. It's what he did all the time. He borrowed liberally from the Brecht-Weill style in terms of basically not being afraid to go to the dark side of humanity. But he wrote songs that everybody could relate to, whether they saw, as the listener, you could see a reflection of yourself in his words, or even if the portrait was perhaps unflattering, it was still easy to recognize where he was going. The point is, he made listeners think beneath the surface. And this gave his work a significant heft and made him quite popular. Unfortunately for the English speakers, like us, his words didn't translate in a manner that would still rhyme. So a lot of his original ideas ended up getting soft-soaped somewhat by the people who tried to translate his songs into English to make them rhyme. An awful lot of it was done by people like Rod McEwen. And yet, even with the soft touch of somebody like Rod McEwen, the songs still somehow survive. Now, we'll end our coverage with Brel and with the person who pretty much followed him in popularity in France, the sexually charged, total freak-out nutcase Serge Gainsbourg, a man who was basically celebrated for writing about topics that, if any of them were acted upon in the 20th century, he would probably be put away in jail for 10 or 20 years. So this is going to be where we go for today's show. So we'll start with Jacques Brel. As I said, he was Belgian, somebody who would prove to be a major influence on people like Leonard Cohen, Rod McEwen, of course, who copied all this stuff, and of all people, David Bowie. David Bowie was a very big fan of Jacques Brel. He began writing songs at a relatively young age, performing them at family gatherings and in around the Brussels cabaret circuit. Interestingly, his family and friends were not really supportive of his work at all, finding his lyrics to be too stark and violent, and his performances much too emotional. However, he did sign a contract around 1953 with Philips Records that started his career, and soon he left Brussels for Paris that year. And by 1954, he was competing in a music contest called the Grand Prix de la Chanson, basically the greatest prize of song, and in France. Out of 28 people who were contending for the prize, he came out number 27. So it didn't really seem to be very promising for Jacques Brel in the beginning. Yet by 1954, he made his first appearance at the prestigious Olympia Theater in Paris and got an incredibly warm welcome with the crowd, something that would only continue over the years until his crowd's reactions to his songwriting and to his performances became downright rapturous, if not worshipful. Interestingly, just 4 years later, 3 years later, in 1957, a similar prize called the Grand Prix de Disc, this time the grand prize of recordings.
Uh-huh.
He won first prize for that in just 3 years' time. Now, by 1959, he signed a new recording contract with Philips Records, and he started playing various shows, including some with an earlier version of Serge Gainsbourg, before he became as notorious as he was. So by the end of the 50s, he had gained an impressive and enthusiastic following across France. He was so popular that he was invited to headline the end-of-year concert at a theater in Paris, and the concert was an enormous success. Now, let's hear something by Gainsbourg. This is actually, I believe this was recorded sometime around 1963, a time when he basically returned to the Olympia Theater in Paris, where he performed and with another artist as a support act, but he was the main act. And once again, his performance was a critical and artistic success, with the audience leaping from their seats in standing ovation following almost every song. And the song that got the people off of their feet mostly at this point in time was this song called Amsterdam.
Dans le port d'Amsterdam, il y a des marins qui chantent les rêves qui les hantent au large d'Amsterdam. Dans le port d'Amsterdam, il y a des marins qui dorment comme des oriflammes le long des berges mortes. Dans le port d'Amsterdam, il y a des marins qui meurent pleins de pierres et de drames aux premières lueurs. Mais dans le port d'Amsterdam, il y a des marins qui naissent dans la chaleur épaisse des langueurs océanes. Dans le port.
All right. Now, of course, rather than play the entire version in French, which is going to go right over most of our heads, mine included, I happen to have an English version of the song that I have the literal French version of his words. And of course, most of the English translations are never identical. It wouldn't make sense to sing them in literal translations. But this is at least very, very, very true to the core of what Brel intended on the song. And you might notice a very strong Brecht Weill connection here in terms of the words and the mood and the feeling of the song, this time performed by none other than David Bowie.
Cool.
In the port
port of Amsterdam, there's a sailor who sings of the dreams that he brings from the wide open sea. In the port of Amsterdam, there's a sailor who sleeps while the river bank weeps to the old willow tree. In the port of Amsterdam, there's a sailor dies, full of beer, full of cries, in a drunken town fight. In the port of Amsterdam, there's a sailor who's born on a hot, muggy morn by the dawn's early light. In the port of Amsterdam, where the sailors all meet, there's a sailor who eats only fish heads and tails, and he'd show you his teeth that have rotted too soon, that can haul up the sails, that can swallow the moon. And he yells to the cook with his arms open wide, "Hey, bring me more fish! Throw it down by my side." And he wants all to belch, but he's too full to try. So he stands up and laughs, and he zips up his fly. In the port of Amsterdam, you can see sailors dance, porters busting their pants, grinding women to porch. They've forgotten the tune that their whiskey voice croaked, splitting the night with the roar of their jokes. And they turn and they dance and they laugh and they lust, till the rancid sound of the accordion bursts. And then out of the night, with their pride and their pants and the slots that they tow underneath the street lamps, in the port of Amsterdam, there's a sailor who drinks, and he drinks and he drinks, and he drinks once again. He'll drink to the health of the whores of Amsterdam, who've given their bodies to a thousand other men. Yeah, they bargain their virtue, their goodness all gone, for a few dirty coins, when he just can't go on. Throws his nose to the sky instead of above, and he pisses like I cry on the unfaithful love. In the port of Amsterdam, in the port of Amsterdam.
Whew. At the time, I think that Bowie fans were a little bit, what's the word?
Surprised? Taken aback?
Yeah, it's a quizzical thing to hear Bowie singing something which sounds like it comes from another era. But
yes,
in retrospect now, it seems like it's a perfect thing for Bowie to cover. And do you? I guess you can easily hear the Brecht-Weil connection in terms of lyrics and how it basically is not afraid to look at the dark side of mankind. It was something that he would do quite a bit. I do want to play one of his own performances in full, Jacques Brel. You could hear what he sounded like when he performed. And I've got the literal translation of some of these words, so you might be able to like follow along to some extent. The song is called The Funeral Tango. And the first verse is something like this. "Ah, I see them already smothering me in kisses and fighting over my hands and asking in a whisper, is death coming around? Is death on its way? Is he still warm? Is he already cold? They open my closets. They fondle my earthenware. They go through my side cases, delighted in advance by my love letters, beribboned by two, that they'll read by the fire while bursting out laughing." You get the idea of him being able to more or less being looking at death almost with his own tongue in his cheek, is saying, look at all these people going to be mocking me even after I'm gone, pretending to be missing me when ultimately I am going to become nothing more than basically something for them, a figure of fun in a sense. Here is in French, it's called Tango Funèbre. I believe it translates to the funeral tango.
Je les vois déjà me couvrant de baisers et s'arrachant mes mains et demandant tout bas: est-ce que la mort s'en vient? Est-ce que la mort s'en va? Est-ce qu'il est encore chaud? Est-ce qu'il est déjà froid? Ils ouvrent mes armoires, ils tâtent mes faïences, ils fouillent mes tiroirs, se régalant d'avance de mes lettres d'amour, enrubannées par deux qu'ils liront près du feu en riant aux éclats. Ah, je les vois déjà, compassés et frileux, suivant comme des artistes mon costume de bois. Ils se poussent du cœur pour être le plus triste, ils se poussent du bras pour être le premier. Ils ont amené des vieilles qui ne me connaissaient plus, ils ont amené des enfants qui ne me connaissaient pas, pensent au prix des fleurs et trouvent indécent de ne pas mourir au printemps quand on aime le lilas. La 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 la. Ah, je les vois déjà, tous mes chers faux amis, souriant sous le poids du devoir accompli. Ah, je te vois déjà, trop triste, trop à l'aise, protégeant sous le drap tes larmes lyonnaises. Tu ne sais même pas, sortant de mon cimetière, que tu entres en ton enfer quand s'accroche à ton bras le bras de ton quelconque, le bras de ton dernier, qui te fera pleurer bien autrement que moi. Je me vois déjà m'installant à jamais, bien au triste, bien au froid, dans mon champ d'eau soleil. Ah, je me vois déjà, je me vois tout au bout de ce voyage-là, d'où l'on revient de tout. Je vois déjà tout ça, et on a le brave culot d'oser me demander de ne plus boire que de l'eau, de ne plus trousser les filles, de mettre l'argent de côté, d'aimer le filet de maquereau, et crier « Vive le roi !» La 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 la.
Jacques Brel performing his own song there, the funeral tango, as you can hear, done with a tremendous amount of flourish and fabulous acting ability, and also just incredible stage performer, something that had an awful lot to do with his lasting fame in France and eventually ended up making other people around the globe very aware of him. The people who had covered his material is truly amazing, truly amazing. A short list includes Joan Baez, Shirley Bassey, Theo Bichel, Glen Campbell, Belinda Carlisle, Ray Charles, Judy Collins, John Denver, Neil Diamond, Celine Dion, Sheena Easton, Marianne Faithfull, Bobby Goldsboro, Tom Jones.
It's quite the list.
Unbelievable. Cyndi Lauper, Brenda Lee, Barry Manilow, Johnny Mathis, Liza Minnelli, Alison Moyette, Olivia Newton-John, Edith Piaf, as we played last week, Gary Puckett, Nina Simone, Frank Sinatra, Dusty Springfield, Sting, Dionne Warwick, Andy Williams, Barbara Streisand.
My boyfriend.
Rather incredible. And this man, who seemed to cover him probably more than anybody, somebody who I'm a tremendous fan of, but certainly somebody who's a little bit one of the most cracked careers of any human being, whom I love for that reason. His name is Scott Walker. And on his early records, he used to do at least maybe two or three Jacques Brel songs per album, including a fabulous version of this song called My Death.
My death is like a swinging door, a patient girl who knows the score. Whistle for her
and the passing time. My death waits like a Bible truth at the funeral of my youth. Weep loud for that and the passing time. My death waits like a witch at night, as surely as our love is bright. Let's laugh for us and the passing time. But whatever is behind the door, there's nothing much to do. Angel or devil, I don't care, for in front of that door there is you. My death waits like a beggar blind, who sees the world with an unlit mind. Throw him a dime for the passing time. My death waits to allow my friends a few good times before it ends. Let's drink to that and the passing time. My death waits in your arms, your thighs, your cool fingers will close my eyes. Let's not talk about the passing time. But whatever behind the door, there's nothing much to do. Angel or devil, I don't care, for in front of that door there is you. My death waits among the falling leaves, in magicians' mysterious sleeves, rabbits, dogs, and the passing time. My death waits among the flowers, where the blackish shadow cowers. Let's pick lilacs for the passing time. My death waits in a double bed, sails of oblivion at my head. Pull up the sheets against the passing time. But whatever is behind the door, you know there's nothing much to do. Angel or devil, I don't care, for in front of that door there is.
Great version of a song called My Death by one of Jacques Brel's best interpreters, Scott Walker, whose career I definitely would recommend, although with a little bit of, you know, warning, because Walker's career is insane and can get very disturbing in the modern day end of things. Like, his most recent stuff is wacky, but I just love anybody who's basically willing to get that far out. Jacques Brel, I think, was one of the reasons that would inspire him to go in that direction. Now, I had also mentioned that, of course, in English, English-speaking countries, we never really got the full impact of what Brel was about because his words were often translated and watered down by the likes of somebody by Rod McEwen. And I want to give an example. Jacques Brel had written a song called Les Moribondes. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Probably not. But basically, it means the dying one. And in the song, he basically has verses where he says goodbye to various people.
Right.
And a chorus about, you know, what he wishes for when he's gone. Here's an example so you can get an idea of the way Jacques Brel set it up lyrically. This is a sort of literal translation of the Brel version of the song. The chorus is, I want them to laugh. I want them to dance. I want them to have fun like crazy people. I want them to amuse themselves like crazy when they put me in the hole. And then he says goodbye, like goodbye, priest. I like you very much. I like you very well, you know. We did not always agree about views, and we were not on the same path, but we were searching for the same port. Or later on the next verse, goodbye, Antoine. I did not like you very much. And it's killing me to die today, knowing that you are still so alive, and yet still as solid as boredom. So you get, you know, the various degrees and angles of what happens when Brel writes. Now, here's what happens, though, when it ends up in the hands of Rod McEwen and the song is translated into English with all of that multifaceted humor and various ways of looking at it removed from it, and it's turned into something like Problem. You might recognize this as a number one hit single from the 70s. Check this out.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend. We've known each other since we were 9 or 10. Together we've climbed hills and trees, learned of love and ABC, and skinned our hearts and skinned our knees. Goodbye, my friend, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. Now that spring is in the air, pretty girls are everywhere. Think of me and I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun.
It's more than enough.
I am so insulted.
It's like the Pat Boone version of a song.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I'm very personally insulted by the existence of that song in that stupid manner, in that really like grossly simplistic way that they dumbed it down. And of course, I didn't know this at the time, but quite honestly, when this song was a big hit single, I happened to be dating a girl who was dying of cancer.
Oh my God.
And she knew it, and she was literally having her body basically amputated one limb at a time. And that song, as this was happening, was the number one song. And I kept thinking, my God, how does she feel hearing this constantly over and over again on AM radio,
right,
sung with this like almost callous like disregard for the real emotional impact of what it was about? I get it when Jacques Brel does it, because you can hear in his writing that it had some depth to it and actually a little bit of humor. But in the hands of the Rod McEwen version, as sung there by Terry Jacks, the thing just became this simplistically morbid, horrible thing.
Right.
And I, to this day, I just basically find it hard to accept that somebody could have taken a piece of art and turned it into such crap, quite frankly. But that has ended up what happening a little bit here in America. Now, there's another example of it that's nowhere near as offensive. Again, it's a Rod McEwen interpretation of the song. And last week, when we covered Edith Piaf, we played the original French words, as written by Jacques Brel, of a song called Ne me quitte pas. In English, Rod McEwen rewrote it, and it took on a title called If You Go Away. And it retained some of the feeling of the song. But you should know exactly what Brel's intentions were to really get the full impact, because it's totally lost in the English translation. At the time, Brel wrote it after his mistress, Zizou, threw him out of her life At the time, she was pregnant with his child, but Brel refused to acknowledge that the child was his own. The woman left him and then later had an abortion because of Brel's actions. So with all of that pain and all of that weird disconnect that had happened, Brel sat down to write this song, more or less about the confusion of the situation. Very, very heavy. In an interview in 1966, Brel said, quite bluntly, it is not a love song, but rather, quote, a hymn to the cowardice of men and the degree to which they were willing to humiliate themselves. He said that he knew that as he wrote it, it might give certain women pleasure who might assume that it was a love song, and he understood that. But that was not at all his intention. In fact, the way he played with the words was to make it seem as though it could have been a love song. Well, the truth was, it was about the fatuousness of some men being able to deceive themselves about how they felt about a relationship and in their own cowardly actions in the course of that. He was being very truthful, in other words, about how he saw himself in retrospect. In English, you might not get all of that, but you still end up with a rather powerful song, especially when you have a version of it as sung by Glen Campbell. Here's the English version of that song, Nimikit Pas, entitled If You Go Away.
If you go away on this summer day, then you might as well take the sun away. All the birds that flew in the summer sky when our love was new and our hearts were high, when the day was young and the nights were long and the moon stood still to the nightbird's song. If you go away, if you go away, if you go away. But if you stay, I'll make you a day like no day has been or will be again. We'll sail the sun, we'll glide on the rain, we'll talk to the trees and worship the wind. Then if you go, I'll understand. Leave me just enough love to fill my hand. If you go away, if you go away, if you go away, if you go away, as I know you will, you must tell the world to stop turning till you return again, if you ever do. For what good is love without loving you? Can I tell you now, as you turn to go, I'll be dying slowly till the next hello. If you go away, if you go away, if you go away. If you go away, as I know you must, there'll be nothing left in this world to trust. Just an empty room full of empty space, like the empty look I see on your face. I'd have been the shadow of your shadow if I thought it might have kept me by your side. If you go away, if you go away, if you go away. But if you stay, make you a night like no night has been nor will be again. I'll sail on your smile, I'll glide on your touch, I'll talk to your eyes that I love so much. But if you go, I will cry, though the good is gone from the word goodbye. If you go away, if you go away, if you go away, please don't go away.
such a brief overview of what Jacques Brel had to offer, but it's at least it's a teaser, so if you're interested, you might be able to go a little bit deeper. With the remaining time, I need to discuss Serge Gainsbourg, who came a little bit later, somebody who is known for his incredible usage of words, a very clever, humorous, provocative...
Yeah. Art and words.
Subversive writer. There was always something almost scandalous about almost everything that he did in his career. Especially by the time he reached the 60s. One of the most interesting, he basically a not very attractive man, known for an oversized nose, ears that stuck out, and a head that looked like, he basically said, he called himself Cabbage Head.
Oh, no.
And so did the public. I mean, he knew that he had a reputation for being so ugly that he basically played it up. He refused, when he would go on TV, he would deliberately wear like dirty clothing and look disheveled.
Nasty.
To basically play up his look as somebody who was ugly. In the meantime, he manages to have affairs with some of the most beautiful women in the world. He was the lover of Brigitte Bardot. for a decent amount of time. He even recorded with Brigitte Bardot. He wrote a song about Brigitte Bardot called Initials BB. And here actually is a song in the mid-60s, circa 1965. What was the big new car that had just come out that everybody was in love with? The sexy Ford Mustang, right? He wrote a song about it, and he basically sang it but with Brigitte Bardot in the studio. Here's Serge Gainsbourg with Brigitte Bardot singing about Ford Mustang.
On se fait des
lignes
en
Ford Mustang.
Et
bang.
On embrasse les platanes.
Mas.
À gauche.
Tang.
À droite. Et à gauche, à droite. Un essuie-glace. Un paquet.
Cool
un
badge.
Avec un inscrit dessus.
Keep cool.
Une barre de chaud.
Lang
en
Ford Mustang.
Et
bang.
On embrasse les platanes.
Mus.
À gauche.
Tang.
À droite. Et à gauche, à droite. Une bouteille de
fluid makeup.
Un
flash.
Un
browning.
Et un
pick-up.
On se fait des
langues
en
Ford Mustang.
Et
bang.
On embrasse les platanes.
Mus.
À gauche.
Tang.
À droite. Et à gauche, à droite. Un numéro de
Superman.
Un écrou de chez
Paco Rabanne.
Une photo
de Marilyn.
Un tube
d'aspirine.
On se fait des
langues
en
Ford Mustang.
Et
bang.
On embrasse les platanes.
Mus.
À gauche.
Tang.
Now that that sets us squarely in the times of when this music originated and just how incredibly controversial he could be. This next song has a title that I cannot translate properly into English on the radio because the title of the song is meant to be as insulting of a word as is possible. And he is calling the person essentially the word for the female sex organ. Four-letter word for the female sex organ. It's called Requiem for a, and you know what it is. Here's an example of the words translated. Listen to the organ. It plays for you. That tune is terrible. I hope you like it. It's quite beautiful, isn't it? It's the Requiem for a... Fill it in. What's that face for? Don't you appreciate it? But what is it inside that you don't like? Personally, I don't mind whether you like it or not. I'll play it for you again, you poor... You get the idea. In French, I can say this. It's called Requiem pour un con.
Écoute les orgues, elle joue pour toi. Il est terrible, cette air-là. J'espère que tu aimes, c'est assez beau, non? C'est le Requiem pour un con. Ouais, je l'ai composé spécialement pour toi, à ta mémoire de scélérat. C'est un joli thème, tu ne trouves pas, hein? Semblable à toi-même. Pauvre con, voici les orgues qui remettent ça. Faut que t'apprennes par cœur cette air-là, que tu n'aies pas même une hésitation sur le Requiem pour un con. Quoi, tu me regardes, tu n'apprécies pas, mais qu'est-ce qu'il y a là-dedans qui te plaît pas? Pour moi c'est idem, que ça te plaise ou non, je te le rejoue quand même.
Right. If that was, if we were in France, I might not be able to have played that track on the radio. I didn't get away with it here. With his innovations, I mean, Serge Gainsbourg actually, in retrospect, gets credit for being one of the founders of trip hop as far as a musical innovation. It's something that he was doing quite a bit, especially.
Yeah, like that.
He's also responsible for an album that actually has gotten such wide recognition that it's considered by many to be among the most, one of the best and accomplished albums of all time. It is also an album that really, if he actually did what the album is about, could have gotten him arrested and put away for years. The album is essentially about a middle-aged man himself driving his Rolls-Royce absentmindedly when he actually bumps into a teenaged girl on her bicycle, knocks her over, and as she falls down, he sees her dress rising up and her white panties underneath, and he falls in love with her, and he seduces her, and they end up meeting in a hotel room where they have basically sexual encounters until they're eventually done with each other. So it's a theme album about a middle-aged man and a teenaged girl. Crazy. Totally crazy that it exists, and yet it is lauded as an incredibly important and influential album. Actually, the French version of Rolling Stone magazine called it the fourth greatest rock and roll album of all time.
Wow.
It's like basically got on those, the rating things, basically you rate things from like, you know, from like 0 to 100 on scales. It's rated at 96. It's called the Histoire de Melody Nelson. And this track is one example. I got some of the words here to maybe give you a little bit of an idea. I thought I did anyway. Where did I put them? Well, let's play the track, and I can find it afterwards anyway, a little bit. Here's like one of the songs from that album, Melody Nelson.
Ça, c'est l'histoire de
Melody Nelson.
Qu'à part moi-même, personne n'a jamais pris dans ses bras. Ça vous étonne, mais c'est comme ça. Elle avait de l'amour, pauvre
Melody Nelson.
Mais elle en avait des tonnes. Mais ses jours étaient comptés, 14 automnes. Un petit animal, quelque sorte.
Melody Nelson.
Une adorable garçonne. Et si délicieux enfant que je n'ai que n'eu qu'un instant.
Translations here to translate what he was singing about there about Melody Nelson. This is a taste of the lyrics. She had love, poor Melody Nelson. Yeah, she had tons of it, but her days were numbered. 14 autumns and 15 summers. A little animal, that Melody Nelson. An adorable little girl. Such a delicious child, whom I only knew for an instant. Oh, my Melody Nelson, lovable little idiot.
Oh, my God.
Just unbelievable. Now, if the year 1969 rolls around and you're Serge Gainsbourg, how are you going to celebrate that?
With something raunchy, I'm sure.
with a song about it. Call it, you know, 1969, the erotic year, or Année Érotique. Serge Gainsbourg.
Gainsbourg et son Gainsborough ont pris le ferryboat. De leur lit, par le hublot, ils regardent la côte. Ils s'aiment et la traversée durera toute une année. Ils vaincront les maléfices jusqu'en 70.
69 années érotiques. 69 années érotiques.
Gainsbourg et son Gainsborough vont rejoindre Paris. Ils ont laissé derrière eux Chelsea. Il s'aime et la traversée durera toute une année. Et que les dieux les bénissent jusqu'en 70.
69 années érotiques. 69
s'aime et la traversée durera toute une année. Il pardonnera ses caprices jusqu'en 70.
69 années érotiques. 69
His vocal partner at this point in his life was Jane Birkin, who had become his lover for a very long stretch of time after the Brigitte Bardot affair. They had a daughter together, Charlotte Gainsbourg, who is actually still a recording artist. You could actually find some contemporary music by his daughter, Charlotte. He's notorious for being able to write songs about things that superficially might not seem like they mean something else, but he sets it up in a way very cleverly in French that it could have double meanings. He got in trouble for it at one point in time when there was a pop singer, a young girl named France Gall, who was a female Donny Osmond of her time in France. And he had written a song for her that she sang, being the young innocent girl that she was, called Lollipops. And only later did everybody realize that there was so much sexual innuendo song in the song that it was so obviously about oral sex.
Right.
And she had no idea. And she found out basically only after the song was released about the scandal that it had created. And it actually derailed her career for a while.
Oh, dear.
Because it was, and she felt like she was set up by Gainsbourg. Now, he had done this so many different ways. Now, he had actually recorded this next song originally with Brigitte Bardot as the female part in the song. But when it came time for it to be released, she balked and said, wait, that's way too much. I do have a career. I'm an actress, and I don't think you can put this out with my vocals on it. I'm sorry. So he held the song until he started his relationship with Jane Birkin, re-recorded it again, and released the song, this time, finding it banned by just about every single country in Europe.
Oopsie.
Or at least, if not banned, then frowned upon to the point where it caused incredible embarrassment. And even the Pope came out and made a comment about saying that the song is blatantly offensive.
Wow.
The song's titled Je t'aime, moi non plus. It means, I love you, me neither. And in it, of course, besides, you might recognize this song became a huge international hit. And there were various ways that this song found its way into American culture, the melody of it, certainly. But here it is, as it was originally released by Serge Gainsbourg, as I said, entitled Je t'aime, moi non plus.